you are beautiful. You are so strong. You're amazing. Like,
every day of life is a blank sheet of paper.
More happy days in our life.
Small, small changes.
You had to just be with life.
To really practice mindfulness.
I am not my thought.
It's not easy, but it's very simple.
If you put those two things together, you know, the sky is the limit.
Damian White, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm super excited to be here.
I'm excited for people and listeners to hear more about your story. For you, what you have been through wasn't as exciting when you were going through. So you were at two different times, you had to go through homelessness. Always wonder when I see homeless people, like, how did you end up here? Don't you have friends? Don't you have family members? Don't you have anyone to help you? That's the question I always have when I see a homeless person. So how did you end up there? Did you have friends, family members? How does that happen?
Yeah, so I did have friends and family that I could have reached out to. My mom tried to get me to come home several times. So this is why when I talk about this, I say, like, I was homeless part by circumstance and also part by choice, because I was also going through like an identity crisis of sorts, you know? So like I left grad school and I was going to pursue music in writing, and I didn't have the discipline and structure to do that, right? So I left my stable position as a grad student to go pursue those dreams of mine, but I wasn't really prepared, I don't think, inside for like what it was going to take for me to achieve those things, because my entire life I had been in school, and school is like, you do your work, they give you the grades, you move on, you kind of like see the trajectory, they show you like the path, okay, you finish this year, there's two more years, or there's three more years, and then after that, you go get a job, and after that, you like, you know, you become the, you know, the top dean at the school or whatever, right? So I had kind of this path laid out for me, and so when I was homeless, it's the complete opposite of that. There's nothing, there's no path, there's no more bills to worry about, there's no more like, all the my entire social circle and circumstances changed. But I would say that, like, to really answer your question, I think that part of it was like self-discovery. So I felt like because I went to school straight, I went from high school to college straight to grad school, I didn't really give myself any time to experience life. And it just happened that, like, I took a crash course, you know? So by being homeless, it was like a crash course. So, like, I was sleeping in shelters. I was eating at shelters. I was talking to homeless people. I was walking around. I had no bills. I had no phone. I threw my phone in the ocean, literally. And part of it was because there was like a natural, like, I also had a natural desire to disconnect, because in those times when people have seen you at like the highest point and then you're at your lowest point, most people's like natural response is to say, like, how can I help you, like, get out of that circumstance? And like, for me, as bad as it was, I was still seeing some of the positive aspects of not having the same constraints or weight on my shoulders that I had before. And so, like, there was a part of it that was freeing. And I think that's the part that makes it weird, right? So it's like, you know, you're in a bad situation. You know, like, this is societally, like, this is where you're not supposed to be, you know? It's like the fear, right? Oh, everyone's one or two paychecks away from being homeless, right? That's the whole fear. And then so, like, when I was there, I was realizing, like, wow, there's so many, like, people. I was in San Francisco for one of those times. I was in Florida for the other time. So I think in both of those cities that are both those places, I just realized that these are real people. Like, we say homeless people, like, they're not still they're still people, right? These are people's stories. I met doctors. Like, former doctors, former teachers, obviously people who had been homeless by, like, circumstance, their parents died. So, you know, whatever, like, people that were on drugs, people that weren't on drugs, but just, like, didn't have any, like, skills or had been laid off. So you're, like, meeting people and you're realizing, like, hey, like, you're not the only person that, like, graduated from college and ended up, like, on the streets for a little while. Some people stayed there for longer. But for me, I think that it was just the combination of having to break away from, like, I don't know which word I would use to capture it, but kind of like the prison of everyone else's expectations and allow myself some space to figure out who I am. And it just so happened that happened during the time when I was homeless.
How How long did the first time last?
The first time lasted for a month and a half, and the second time lasted for 3 months.
Okay. Okay, so during this month and a half, when did you decide? Like, was it your decision not to be homeless? Like, how did you leave that place? Did you just get the desire? You were like, okay, I learned what I needed to learn. I'm ready to leave. How did that happen?
No. So, I mean, both times that I ended up coming home, it was mostly out of, I won't say fear, but I would say like realizing that I had tapped out of those places. So like, I no longer felt safe. I started to feel too comfortable. Right. So you get detached from real life for so long that you're like, wait, no bills. I can eat for free at the shelter. I can, you know, I don't have to go. I don't have to be anywhere at any time. I can do whatever I want today. Right. You start to live that. And like, I really want people in their minds to like put themselves in those shoes where they actually have to consider what it feels like to think like that, you know, because it's not a logical thought when your life is normal. Right. But when your life is not normal, then it's possible that like you develop different ways of thinking, you know, when you're in different circumstances, like it's like survival, right? So when you go into survival mode, you're not going to use the same tactics you use when you have all the resources at your disposal. So in those moments, I felt like I was unsafe and I had become too comfortable and the place started to feel too familiar, started to feel like too much like real life. And so then at that time, I knew like I was either going to get in trouble, die, or I had to go home.
So when you're saying you didn't feel safe, like, is it like real danger out there for the people living in the streets? Or do you mean by you just felt like you were losing yourself in a sense of like, no, at some point you don't get any desires, hopes, dreams when you get too comfortable? That's what I think. So what was it for you that made you feel not safe?
It was both of those things. It was both of those things for sure. Okay. So I think that the second thing you said, probably inform the first part. So it's that comfort and that like you start to get careless, right? So I started to stop being so picky around with who I was around or like where I would go in the cities, right? So like I would go to those streets that you probably shouldn't be on, that you knew when you like, I knew because I lived in both those places not homeless, right? So I knew like these are areas you don't go to. So I found myself walking down streets that like I knew better than to walk down, right? So I had heard all of the horror stories or the, you know, these are the areas where like, you know, these are the areas that are on the news at night. Right. And so when I was renting, I knew not to go there, but I found myself getting much more comfortable, like walking around those places, talking to people, just kind of seeing what's going on. Because when you're out there, like I kind of felt like an explorer, which was like, it's like a weird way to conceptualize it. But like, I'm in a city that I'm not from and I'm walking around places I don't know necessarily the complete history of, but like there's something that's kind of like exciting about that. I don't know if there's like a dopamine release or something that happens when you're kind of like in, it's like there's a little, it's like when you watch a scary movie or like a thriller, you feel that like roller coaster ride when you know it's like the jump scare is coming, but you're not sure when. It feels like that walking down those streets sometimes because you're like, I know that stuff can happen here. But like, I also kind of like am inviting a little bit of that like mystery into my life because like there at that point in time, like I didn't have any, I wasn't married. I didn't have any kids, nothing like that. So for me, it's like I had thrown my phone away. So I didn't have any responsibility. So at that particular moment, it just felt like, hey, just do what feels right to you. Be out in the world. Talk to people, like figure it out and don't worry about all the stuff that everyone else is worrying about. And even though like I had those thoughts, I still in the back of my mind, I still remember like, hey, you're smart. Hey, like you're talented. Hey, you have skills. Hey, you went to college. Hey, like I didn't like completely lose myself in terms of like forgetting who I was before, but like I also exposed myself to situations and things that like I hadn't before. So I felt like I became a bit of a different person because I had to meld those two things together after like having all of the school and then having the life blend, you know? So like when I came back now, like this is how we get to like me writing a book and me podcasting and those kind of things, because it's like, how do you take those experiences and wrap them up in a way that you don't feel guilty and regretful about for the rest of your life?
So when we were chatting before we started conversation, I told you I lived in a van for 8 months. For 3 months, me, my ex-husband and our toddler, we traveled with a van. And there have been times when people called police because our van was parked there. And there have been times, not many times, that people looked at us like we are some of these weirdos. And I felt sometimes like, I wish you knew me. I wish you knew like that, like I'm educated and I'm, you know, like I'm a human being and I'm not some random person. And when I lived in a van, I also saw other people living in the cars, in vans. We communicated, we have chats. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, I learned so much. These are people, as you mentioned, these people have stories. What is your biggest lessons from this that you took in everyday life? Do you have more compassion for people who live in the streets or even in your everyday life with your friends and family members? How have you applied those lessons?
Yeah, I think that you just realize that people are pomegranates. It just showed me that, like, it's exactly what you just said. You can't assume just because of someone's situation or circumstance that they're not educated or that they're not, you know, I work at a sports card store. I do marketing there. And like, you never know who walks in the door. Right. And like, people can come in like dressed very modestly, but like they'll spend $25,000. Right. And you could have, and like, if you don't approach them with your customer service, like a person who is capable of that because they don't have the briefcase and the tie, you know, and the tie like that, then like, you're already doing that interaction a disservice because you're already discrediting them just based on like their appearance, right? Which is something that we all know, but we all do anyway. So I feel like my greatest takeaway was just don't do that. Like, don't do that. Like, give people the opportunity to talk to you, talk to people. Like, even if I'm at a gas station or something, like, find a reason to have a casual chat with the clerk. Or if some guy is like talking about a football game and you want to chime in and just be like, yeah, that game was crazy. Like, even that little thing, it's just you interacting with the world. It's just you being a part of the world and engaging with people, regardless of like what you know about them. And I think that for me, like 90% of the time when I do that, there's always later I'm able to see, okay, this is why I was supposed to do that. Like, they shared a resource or I learned something or they told a joke that I got to tell later because it was funny. Or like, I just, you know, a myriad of reasons why, like, things I wouldn't have learned. So I think that the second part of it would be that there's an opportunity lost cost, right? So like, you can miss out on stuff because you're so guarded and closed in and judgmental, right? It's not just like you're protecting yourself from other people, which is what we think. Like, you're also missing out on stuff because you're not allowing people to like bring any value to you, and you're not allowing yourself to bring value to people because you feel like they're other.
That's so interesting. I love that. To just be more humane and even in casual chats and conversations, remember that behind this human being, there is a story. Do you have any like moment or any conversation that really made an impact on you, or like any day or maybe any location? Someone said something to you that you really, really remember vividly.
That's
from
a great question.
Experience, obviously.
Yeah, I think that like, I don't have a particular conversation, but I do have memories and moments where like, there's like four or five people all in the same scenario. All of us from different places. And we're just sitting around talking, hanging out and like spending the day together. You know, like in San Francisco, I used to sit basically on the same like street. And it's funny you say people live in a van. So in San Francisco, there's this place called Land's End. It's like, I think that's what it's called. But it's a huge mountain and people like watch the sunrise there over the water. And what's it called? No, I'll look the name up to get it right. But there's people sleep out there in their vans and they open up the trunks and they watch the sunrise. Mm-hmm. Couples. Like, I saw couples sleeping and waking up with their blankets, like watching the sunrise. And like that, they're not sitting there feeling like I should be in a home. Like, they're there. Like, that's what they're doing. They're just living in the van. They're living their life. They wake up, they make coffee, and then they like watch the sunrise together. And like, that's their normal life. Or from the outside, you look at them and you say like, they're in a terrible situation because they're sleeping in their van. You know what I mean? And like, but if you ever got a chance to talk to them, which I did have that opportunity, you realize that like, you don't get to decide how people feel about their own scenarios. You don't get to decide how they feel about their situation. You can project your own like thoughts and expectations and norms and judgment onto other people's scenarios and situations, but you don't get to be the person that tells them how they feel. Right. So I think that for me, it was just like having those moments sitting around, just sitting outside or sitting at the park with people that like, I didn't know. And like, I was just able to talk to like normal conversation that we weren't trying to see like who went to which school. We weren't trying to see who went to which job, like how much money somebody made. None of us were making any money. None of us had any places. Like I couldn't show off my house and my furniture, you know, none of us had like anything. So it's like you're meeting people at their most vulnerable and like you said, humbled, humane point in life. So like you're actually able to like talk because you're not, there's no shoulder, you know, shoulder nudging and like trying to edge the other person out and make myself feel bigger than you. There's none of that because everybody has nothing.
I love that. Sometimes when I'm having conversations and I get asked like, and I understand people are curious, for example, like where are your clients based or how many listeners do you have or some questions, not only with a podcast guest, I'm not like just regular people. It's like, why do you care? Because for me, it's like just having this conversation. I'm more curious about what you think about love or what love is or what forgiveness is or how do you treat your friends or what do you do when you are in a bad mood? Then how much you earn, what you do for work or for living. Like, and I love how you're saying that it gives you more like, it's just me and what I'm talking. And I mean, just enjoying the conversation rather than just like, as you said, like showing them off my furniture or house or whatever it is. So I just love that feeling when you are just enjoying the conversation for the sake of the conversation. Before, yeah. I want to ask so many questions about your book as well. But for the second, okay, you have been homeless. You went home. Why did you, was it by choice? What happened for the second time? How did you find yourself in Florida? Again, being homeless for 3 months. What happened then in between the first one and second one?
So I was in Florida for the first time for the first month. So Florida.
Oh, first time. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And then San Francisco was the second. I kind of told both stories at the same time. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the second time I left my job and I didn't want to go back home to Columbus, Ohio. So that was like the problem. I told myself like when I had sold my car, I was like, I'm never going to have a car again. I live in California. Like I ride the train, like I take Ubers and like my life was just like lit and cool and fun to me. You know what I mean? In San Francisco. And I just felt like I was not going to go back home for a variety of reasons. Like, you know, when you just feel like you closed a chapter of your life, like I had family at home, so I knew I'd have to go see like see people there. But like I didn't see my life happening in Columbus, Ohio anymore. So like when I was at, when my back was up against the wall and I didn't really know what to do, I had a couple thousand dollars left in my bank account so that I could like stay out there for a while. And then like when that ran out, which wasn't very long, then I still didn't want to go home. And so I decided that I was just going to stay there and I was going to figure it out. And then like slowly stop trying to figure it out. Like I slowly stopped trying to like figure out how to get another job. And I slowly stopped trying to figure out like how I could go home if I needed to go home. And so that's what I meant by like starting to get too comfortable. Like my desires for that change, because it's like, it's like sort of fun and freeing not to be worried about those things. Right. And like, I don't think that that's a life philosophy. Like you should never worry about those things. I'm just trying to drive home the point that like in that specific instance, I wasn't worried about the same things that everybody else was worried about. I just wasn't. And so, I stayed there longer because in San Francisco, there's a much larger homeless population. So there's shelters, there's plenty of shelters. There's plenty of food banks and pantries. Like I had like 3 or 4 options where I could eat every day, you know? Whereas like if you're somewhere else where there's not as many people that are in the same scenario, then it's probably tougher. Like being in Columbus and I'm being homeless, I can't, like, it wouldn't be the same. Like there's not the same kind of like infrastructure here because there's not such it's not a known fact that there's so many, such a high concentration of homeless people like in a city like San Francisco. So it would be different. But where I was, just I didn't feel that. I would go to the shelter, then I'd go to the food pantry, I'd go to the park, I'd come back to the shelter. And like I didn't feel like that felt like a normal routine, the same way someone goes to the gym, they go to work, they come home and they go to the grocery store. It felt the same. So like, it was like a parallel, like a little parallel life, but just like on a different, entire different spectrum.
So when you mentioned, do you remember that you said like, oh, this inner voice was always there that was saying like, you are smart, you have skills. Did you find that the more time was going, that that voice was fading? Or was that voice always there telling you, you are enough, you can always leave this place, you're smart, you're capable?
Man, that's a great question. That's a phenomenal question. Definitely like moments where the voice was muted, right? Mm-hmm. So there were definitely moments where I felt like the voice quieted down, and I started to let my just like, you know, your we call it the monkey brain. I don't know if that's what I call it. The monkey brain, where it's just like, you're like kind of like the dogs, and they see like they're outside and they see like stuff. That's how my brain was running. And that stuff starts happening so fast that like you can like still hear the fact that you know better, but there's other sounds louder. You know what I mean? So I found myself like, I won't say that it disappeared. I never forgot who I was. I never forgot what I had done. I never forgot what I had accomplished. So like, it was just that in the being in the streets, like nobody cares about that stuff. Nobody cared that I went to Davidson College and I knew and I had met Stephen Curry, and like nobody cares. Like that's not what anybody's worried about. So I think that like the thing that voice used, the thing like the same broken record stories that voice would tell you, like, hey, you're great, you're the guy, you know, all that stuff, like those things just didn't apply. So like I had to find other way. Like it's really strange when you think about it. Like, why would somebody want to like interact with you repeatedly? Like what makes someone, it's a social media thing, right? Like what, why would someone follow your page? Like what's going to make them like say, I need to know what's going on next. I need to see, like, I need an update, right? What makes that happen? So I feel like when you're out there, it's not the same stuff that is normal to a business person or like a student. And I found that, like, I don't know, it was challenging. I think that in retrospect, like if I would talk to you like right when I came back, obviously I think that this conversation would sound a lot different, because like I hadn't accomplished things yet. So I still had that kind of like, man, I threw my life away feeling. Right. And I feel like most people get stuck in Most people get stuck in that. Like, I think I threw my life away, and you live, like, I'm 31. Right. So like I could live with that feeling for the rest of my life, and I could live to 70 or 80 or 90, who knows. And like for even bigger portion of my life, feel that same regret. And people do that. People live in regret and misery forever. And like, I refuse to be that person. So to me, like being creative, being productive, engaging with people, like moving in alignment, all those things are like important to me. Making sure that I'm doing things that I feel purposeful, and I feel good about, and I feel confident and proud of. I think that like combated the guilt and resentment and like the feeling of like wastefulness.
Makes complete sense. So for the second time, when did you go back home? And then tell me, what was the journey from going back home and then writing your book? What is the book about, and what's the motivation, inspiration behind the book?
So I'll tell you a crazy story. So the night before I came home from San Francisco, I was sitting out like by this park, by this fence. And in the morning, some guy, like, he had a cart and a cane. He was like tall, big guy. And he was like, where's the hospital? And I was like, that way. Right. That's all I said. Just that way. And he was super mad, because he was like, definitely already kind of like had indulged in whatever his substance was, you know, and like was already very paranoid and like high alert. And like, when I just said that way, he was like, who are you talking to? Like, what the F did you say to me? And like, he started walking towards me with his cane. Right. And so like in that moment, it was like, this is starting to feel like a little dangerous, because I didn't even do anything wrong. I didn't like go up and like punch the guy or take something out of his cart, knock his cart over, like nothing like that. I just literally answered the question that he asked, which is standard practice for everyone. And so at that point, I just really started to feel unsafe. I started to feel unsafe because I knew, like, either A, I didn't know where I was. Like, I didn't know why I was where I was. I didn't know it was a situation where I couldn't just answer a question, right? And I'd sat in this exact same spot for 2-3 weeks, you know? But it was just that day. So I had to find a way home, and I had no phone at that point. So I ended up going to the hospital so that I could, like, see if I could call my grandma, you know, and see if I could get a hold of my mom, because I had heard about this Greyhound program where if you have someone that will receive you when you get back to where you're going, if you can call them, then, like, they'll book your Greyhound ticket for you for free so you can go home if you're homeless. So, like, I had to get in touch with my mom and my grandma so that they could say, like, hey, yes, we know him. We'll accept him, obviously. Like, we'll pick him up at the Greyhound station. And so I had to go, like, to the downtown in the city and, like, talk to the people. And it was, like, a couple of days process. And my bus ride was absolutely abominable. It got, like, the bus, like, I rode a bus from San Francisco to Ohio. And, like, it went all the way down to, like, Texas and, like, back up to Ohio. And we were stuck in Texas for, like, 10 hours. It took me 5 days to get home with no phone, mind you. On a Greyhound, right? So, like, that already, it was just like...
I have been to Greyhound.
It was a nightmare. It was an absolute nightmare. And so, like, that was the trip home. And how does that funnel into the book? I'll say that before all that stuff, I would say that religion and, like, spirituality... Not so much spirituality, but I would say that my like relationship with God was more strained prior to that, right? So I feel like sometimes, and we've heard this before, like at your lowest point, you look around and you're like, I'm not in control anymore. So you have to start considering some other options. So whether you're like, hey, the universe is taking control, or you're like, God's taking control, or you're like, I don't know, whatever, however you conceptualize it. For me, I had to start asking some hard questions of myself. Because I went from a position where it's like, I say I want to do this thing and I make that thing happen. And then now you're kind of like in a passive role where, like, stuff's happening in your life and you feel like it's kind of spiraling out of control. And you know you're not the one doing it. You just know. Like, when I go push the button on the coffee maker and I see the coffee drip down, I know I've made the coffee maker. I know I've made the coffee drip down. Right? But, like, when you find yourself in, like, an alley at 2 a.m. and, like, you don't know how you got there. And then you, like, have a couple life-threatening instances. Like, I almost got stabbed 2 times, right? And so, like, you just start to ask yourself some questions. So, like, I got really sad, I think, because I decided I was either gonna, like, have to go home or I was gonna die in San Francisco. And when I came back, I started writing these poems as a way to, like, talk about some of the questions I, like, had during that time. So, like, the book, which I have here, just is designed to, like, be a place to, like, irrigate your identity, you know? So it's not long. The poems aren't long. Like, the book's not long. These are just, like, some of the, like, topics, like, death and grieving and, like, loss and forgiving and, like, family issues, things that, like, I was thinking about, and, like, God, right? And, like, heaven, if there's one, and, like, nature, and, like, balancing all those things. And, like, it's like the world told me that I couldn't think all those things at the same time. And then I realized I could. I just had to find a way to talk about them in a way that was, like, palatable and tangible for others. So I felt like this book was my place to, like, put those things I was curious about, kind of, like, discuss the, like, tug of war me and God have been on for a long time. Talk about some of my, like, fascination with natural phenomena. Talk about art, you know, or just, like, interact with art. So, like, pulling together and bridging, like, my interest into one is basically what the book was. That's the gist of the book.
Do you have a favorite poem?
I have a few, yeah. I have a couple.
If not, it's okay. If you are willing, maybe some part of it or whole poem, just like to read a tiny part of your favorite poem.
Absolutely.
I'm putting you on spot here, but I'm really curious.
I like it.
And I would encourage, first of First of all, say the name again of the book. And before you're searching for the poem, I would encourage people to go and check out your book. And if you go on his website, which will be down in the description box, you have both links for Amazon and for Barnes & Nobles.
Yep. So the name of the book is I Made a Place for You. It's an illustrated poetry collection. This poem is called I Am Innocent. To grieve is to soothe an abscess. Reconcile the strife between faith and fate. For freedom is no wavering white flag. We build a fortress of validation and guillotine our most precious birthright, innocence. We swoon between slithering temptation, holiness roosting in the umbrage, yet will we emerge victorious? Yes. Heaven's doors open serendipitously, ushered by God's palm itself. Our journey is the price of admission.
I love that. I feel like almost the man who almost hit you with his...
his cane?
What is it called? Not the stick, but well, cane, yes. I think he was almost like a blessing.
Yeah.
For you to just almost like a guide that triggered you. Not triggered you, but like almost inspired you to go back home. So how was your, like when you moved back to home, and I remember you were saying like, I'm not moving back home. Like, I'm going to figure it out here.
Yeah.
Did it feel right when you moved there? Was it like a feeling of, okay, maybe it's not as bad as I thought, or you still had like regrets of coming back home?
It felt somewhere in between there. Because there were parts, it's like when you tell yourself like you're going to do something. So like for me, it was a big moment for me to move away from home. Like it was a milestone, you know, like a lot of people in my family like stay in Columbus, Ohio, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. They stay here. They're from here. They're born here. Lots of people do that. And that's perfectly okay, because sometimes it's family. Like you want to you, the most important place to be is where your family is. Right. So that's, and I understand that. For me, like I wanted to experience different places. I wanted to travel. I wanted to like, and so like when I moved to San Francisco, it felt like a very big, like a big boy decision. You know, it feels like you're adulting and like you're succeeding. That's what it felt like. You know, I got a job and like I move in and I got an apartment and all that stuff. And so I think that like, there's a bit of a fracturing that happens when like you have to realize that like, you don't get to lean on that kind of accomplishment anymore, because you're going back to live at your mom's house. And so like, there's a bit of like weighing that, right? So like, it felt right because I had people around me that loved me and weren't going to judge me, and I could talk to and tell them the story and like explain to them, you know, I could tell stories for days about just that, just those months, just day, every day something crazy happened. Like, but my family, they weren't like, beating me up about it. They weren't kicking me while I was down. They were trying to make sure that I was like getting on the right path. So like that part about being home felt good. I think all the like feeling of accomplishment and like that kind of faded away, and I had to rebuild that. And that's like part of why I started writing as well, because like there was a point in time where I was still looking for a job and I was still trying to like figure it out. And so like, it's like, how do you like go from being the guy that's like, you're at the best school in the country for your field, you got fellowships and you graduated from a great college. And then like, you have nothing. And then now you're coming back into the world where everyone knew you before. So you think like when I was away, nobody knew me. It was like all new cast of characters. And then when I come back home, it's like all the people who knew me since I was like a kid. And like, they've seen me achieve things and go to college. And like, I was, you know, to some of them, I was considered a golden child, because like I was able to get away and like go get a scholarship and go like do the thing that like you're supposed to do. Right. So like, it's hard. Now you're looking at that same person and like, I look like I haven't been to the barbershop in like 7 years, and like my clothes are weird, and like, cause I'm wearing clothes from the shelter. Like, you're like, how do you reconcile that when it's in your face? You know what I mean? For me, you have no choice but to be like, I'm both those people. Like, both those things happened to me. I can't ignore that I went to college. I can't ignore that I was homeless. I have to be able to like somehow bridge the gap that like both those things happen, and that's okay. And I can still be whoever I want to be despite both those things happening. Right. But for other people, they don't have that same responsibility to accept that. They can think whatever they want, and they can project whatever they want. And oftentimes people do. And so, like, to me, it was like, there was a tension between like, should I be explaining myself to people? Should I be like explaining so I can make them feel better and feel like I'm okay and convincing everyone that things are good now? Like, should I be doing that? Who's that for? Like, if I don't need that for my own healing, then I'm actually traumatizing myself, right? Me trying to convince other people, like, no, I'm the same guy as before. I just kind of went through a bad situation. And like, you know, like me doing that over and over and over and over again would have just been traumatizing because it wasn't the truth. And I'd already been healing myself. And so it's like, I felt like being at home ended up being like great. It ended up being great. And I would say that like, it was probably the only way, like it was the only way that I was going to like survive. Like I wouldn't have, if I didn't come home, like I just wouldn't have made it out of San Francisco, because I wasn't at the point where I'd been homeless for 3 months. I wasn't looking for jobs or anything. I was just like out there. So I think that like, had I not come home, it would have been, there would be no book for sure.
Did people around you put expectations on you, or was it just you being really hard on yourself?
I think it's both. And also I have a hard time being places both, that like, okay. I have a hard time being places I don't like feel like I'm growing, or like there's space for me to like be myself. And so I think that like going to California also just felt like more diverse perspectives, more open-mindedness. And whether or not that was true or not, this is like my fantasy. This is like my fantasy in my mind before I moved there. Like, these are the things I'm thinking. Like, I'm going to be around more free-thinking people. I'm going to be downtown, and it's a techie city. So it's moving fast, and it's like all the things, right? So you, like, I put a value on those things, which would be my own expectation. But I think that people also had an expectation that like, I was just going to keep following whatever path they had set for me in their own mind. And like, when I would do stuff that would veer off of that, like when I would make music, or I'm like, hey, I'm going to go try this, or I'm going to start this little consulting business. And like, I'm going off the beaten path because like, in someone's eyes, I was supposed to go to school and get a job and just be working, have kids, and like live. And like, just, that's what I was, that was what I heard. Like, when are you going to have kids? Like, what are you going to do next? Like, where are you going to go? Like, that's what I was hearing. And so those expectations I would feel viscerally, especially because inside it's like, I'm still like ruptured in here. Like, my heart's still broken. Like, I'm still patching my heart together. So I'm still putting my mind back together. And like, I'm not worried about those things. I just wasn't worried about that stuff. And so I think that like, now I can kind of see the blessing that was in disguise about that time, because it really just gave me more, it gave me more life data to process. Mm-hmm. And so now when I'm making decisions and like talking to people, I'm able to like come from a perspective that's like how my actual heart feels. Like, not just like what I think sounds good to you.
Okay.
Like, I didn't want to come on this podcast and tell you like, I regretted being homeless and it was awful. And I would tell it like, I wouldn't do that to you, because that's not how I think about it. And I don't want to give that story so that's just another narrative. That's the same narrative. That's always the narrative. No, like it sucked and it was tough and it was a bad situation, but I learned from it and I grew from it. And I wouldn't be the person that I am today and becoming if it wasn't for that. So like, there's no point in me to like sit and badmouth that experience. You know, there's just none. It's like, if you broke your ankle, for instance, like you break your ankle playing volleyball, but like while you're at home recovering, you like learn how to draw and then you start painting, right? If you didn't break your ankle, maybe you would have never had sat down and had the time to like learn how to draw. So like, don't be like, you're in the future, you're going to probably remember that was the time when you started drawing. In the moment, you're going to be super mad because your ankle's broken. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense, because when I gave birth, I have a 5-year-old son. I gained 58 pounds. Now, all gone. I look amazing. But in the moment, like, I was like 20 years old. I hated my body. hated it. So if I didn't hate it, my body, if I didn't gain weight, I wouldn't have started working out. I wouldn't have started yoga. I wouldn't have done yoga teacher training. Because I did yoga teacher training and because of the writing assignments, I started my blog because I reconnected to my writing passion. And then I have been like blogging for years and then I wrote a book and then I was like, I was so many things have started from me giving birth and gaining so much weight that now that I look back, it's like, oh, that was a blessing because I have been working out since. I have been doing yoga for like almost 5 years. And hopefully with God's help and like my health being in amazing shape, I can do it all the way until I'm 120. But I get it, what you are saying. Like sometimes what we think is, why did this happen, can be a blessing. So what's your book? And the question I asked was because I have moved around a lot. I have lived in like 27 apartments or something since I was born, moving like, oh, this is my last place to move. And you know, like in few countries. And at some point when I moved back home and I have my own apartment now, I thought to rent it out and go and move somewhere else. And I realized it was not anymore because I wanted to explore. It was me running away. Mm-hmm. And it was just me running away basically from myself. So that's why I ask you, like, was it you running away from yourself or was it something else? And that's why I was curious to ask people the question. Was writing your book almost you connecting to your true self? As you mentioned, like, I'm not talking what people want to hear anymore. I'm saying what I think. Did the writing your book help you to reconnect back to yourself?
Definitely. So, I mean, I've been writing for a long, I've been writing since I was four. You know, my first poem I wrote when I was four, and my mom still has books of poetry I wrote when I was in elementary school. You know, I've been writing poetry for a long time. I never studied poetry. Like, I never studied poetry. Like, I never went to school to be a poet. Like, I just have always loved it as a form of expression. Like, one of my first poems is funny. I was just reading it not that long ago. Was about like a Pop-Tart with no frosting and like how it felt around the Pop-Tart with frosting. Like, that's something I wrote when I was like six. But like, when I think about like what that means, like, I was already able to like detect differences, right? So like, why, like, it sounds funny, but like the one without the frosting felt isolated compared to the other ones with the frosting. And we could probably like extrapolate that to mean something metaphorical, like the guy without the chains or the girl without the Louis Vuitton bag feels different than the, you know, like, we could probably take that to our adult life. But like, it's cool to know that like, I was already thinking that way when I was like five or six, which is, I was just reminded of that because my mom was moving and like I was looking at stuff. So I saw that book down there. But yeah, I would say that it was very cathartic for me, like, to write the book because I had like, I tell this story, is like, it would be weird if I went to brunch and I was like, hey guys, like, what do you think about purgatory? Like, what do you think happens when you go there? Like, that's not brunch table conversation. You know what I mean? Like, that's super weird. If, like, no one does that, right? So, like, at brunch, you talk about, like, everyone's job and their family and their boyfriend and their girl and their dog and, like, what they're doing for the holidays. Like, that's what brunch talk is. It's not like, hey, like, tell me about, like, the scariest thing you've ever thought and, like, let's, like, figure out, like, let's talk about it. You know? Tell me, like, so this book was my place to put those things. And that's why... that's why the title is I Made a Place for You, is because I was making a place to talk about things that like I didn't know where the other space would be to talk about them. And also I was allowing God another chance to like have an influence on my life, because for a long time I chose to keep him out of my life. And so like I made a place for that as well. And so it's kind of like a double meaning with the title.
So what do you think would be the biggest takeaway for the people reading your book? Like, how can your book support them? Because people might be like, oh, I wasn't a homeless. Like, they might judge what we talked about and not connect their life to our conversation. I believe you can learn everything from any many things from any conversation.
Yeah,
you can learn stuff about business from doing yoga. I feel everything is interconnected. So what do you think it will be the biggest takeaway from your book for people to read it?
I think that anyone that has experienced insecurity or has experienced doubt or is in need of some form of healing, would benefit from reading the book, because although like there's, I don't even talk about being homeless in the book. There's not even a poem about being homeless in the book. Right. So the book is about the thoughts that came along that journey. So the questions I had, like, is God real? Right. Like, does it matter if I rekindle my relationship with my father? Right. Like, these are questions I was asking at the time. Cause like when you're thinking about like dying or not dying, you start to say like, like if I died right now, like I didn't do all these things. And then you're like, some of those things I don't want to do regardless. And like that starts a conversation. So I would say anyone that's ever like buried something inside or has like parts of themselves that they have to hide, they would want to read the book because like this is how I turn myself inside out. Right. So like there's no storyline that's like, you're going to follow me through my journey through homelessness. No, like these are just like, they're concepts and they're poems that are meant to like make people curious and ask questions of themselves.
Where can people find you if they want to maybe ask you questions, follow you? Where everything will be your Instagram and Facebook, not Facebook, your Instagram and website will be down in the show notes, but still for people who are lazy to go down there,
yep.
Tell them where can they find you?
Sure. So my website is DamianWhiteWrites.com. So D-A-M-I-A-N, White, W-H-I-T-E, and then Writes, W-R-I-T-E-S.com. And then my Instagram is Damian K. White. So spelled exactly the same.
Perfect. Perfect. Two more questions for you.
Sure.
Before I ask you my last question, is there anything you really wanted to share or talk about during this conversation, but I just didn't get the chance to ask you the question?
Sure. Yeah. I would be interested to hear like, or to talk about how the stillness of like reflection helped with this. Right. So like I don't want to leave out the part of the story where it's like, I spent a lot of time with myself. I spent a lot of time like in deep reflection and deep contemplation and meditation and crying and all those things. I spent a lot of time doing all that, and that comes with it. So I also don't want the story to sound like, yeah, I came home, I was super inspired, I just sat down with my pen and my pad and I wrote the book. That's not true. I wrote this book over the course of quite a while. And like it took a lot of deep introspection and deep careful consideration about like, who are you now? How do you want to give that person to the world? How do I want to package that person to the world now? Because I changed, you know, when I came back, I told one of my coworkers, I said like, I'm different. Like, I'm just different. I don't know how to describe it. I'm not the same as before, because all the veil was like unwrapped. Like the veil went away. I had this like rosy colored veil about life just from like being in the bubble of school for so long that it went away, and like I changed. And so like, how do you like tell people incrementally about that change? How do you like, and how do you show them how to get to a change like that if they also want to feel some sort of transformation? It doesn't happen by just like sitting down and making yourself do something. Like you have to really like be still. You have to really like pay attention, like that inner voice we were talking about earlier. Like when you're like still and aligned and making and things are like moving in the right direction, like that voice is strong, powerful, and wise. When you're not, it's, you can't hear it, right? So like being able to like take that voice inside, like sometimes I wake up and I hear a line of poetry. I wake up and I hear a line like in my head, and I write it down 4 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, because like, I'm not going to write the poem right now, but I know like that moment was inspired by something somewhere, somehow, and I have to capture it. And that's my job. Like, my job now is to capture those moments in whatever artistic way I can. So that's whether that's making music or whether that's writing poetry. I like both of those things. And like sometimes one format is better than the other, but like my job is to make sure that like I'm taking advantage of the creative flow and like delivering that to the world in a valuable way. I feel like that's just like, that's my passion. That's what I want to do. Like, I want to wake up and do that.
I got excited by listening to you because I can feel how passionate you are about it. For the people listening, and if they are listening to us, please leave us with a message. It can be two or three sentences. It can be just a word. It can be a poem. It can be a book, whatever you want. Just something that is in your heart and soul right now.
Yeah, I would say, like, this is something. So Lauryn Hill is a rapper, and I watched this video not that long ago, and she said, let's not be mediocre in our greatness. Right? So, like, I think that, like, a lot of times we want to, like, show people we're doing stuff, but we also want to we also throttle it so it doesn't look like we're moving too far away from them. So it doesn't look like our lives are so much different. Like, we want to still kind of be in the in crowd of what's going on with everyone else. And I feel like, for me, I think that, like, it's important to, like, do things to the best of your ability, and, like, people should have to adjust to the quality of whatever you're doing. We shouldn't be mediocre, like, if we're aspiring to do great things. So piggyback on what Lauryn Hill said, it's just, I think that we should really give things our full effort. And, like, it's scary to me sometimes to, like, I'll start writing something and I'll get scared because, like, I don't know what it's going to be in the end. And, like, that's how I know, like, I'm doing something that, like, is powerful, because I'll start a poem or I'll start a song and I'll say, man, like, I wish I didn't, because I don't know what's going to come of this, right? And so I think that, like, the other thing I feel during that is, like, okay, like, I have to try to make this the best as possible. So I would just, like, tell people that there's no shame in trying to be amazing. Like, there's no shame in trying to be the best version of yourself. There's no shame in separating yourself from other people so that you can find out who you really are. And, like, those are super important aspects of life that no one's just going to tell you that. You have to decide that for yourself. And then I think that when you decide that for yourself, you'll see the benefits immediately. At least I know I did.
Thank you for adding the part where you said, like, I don't want people to think that, oh, it just happened like this, to be vulnerable and to share that you went through those moments of being scared and releasing and healing, because it's important people to remember, because there is no overnight success. And we sometimes don't see other people's struggles, and we cannot see them. We cannot feel them. Even if you start to talk about your struggles every single day, all the time, I and other people cannot still experience the same. So thank you for adding that you went through challenging moments before you wrote this book. And just, I appreciate your story. I appreciate you being here. I appreciate you being so open and vulnerable and willing to share almost all parts of your story.
Absolutely. I'm thankful for the platform to do it.
Thank you so much, everyone, for being here. Thank you so much for our listeners, and have a phenomenal rest of the day or night, wherever you are. And until next time.